When we usually in the catechism book, after we have the commandments, the Ten Commandments, which is the divine law, then we have a session on what we call the precepts of the church. We know that the church and the state are both perfect societies. And one of the important elements of a perfect society is that those in authority have the authority to make laws. And so, you know, the government do have laws, and then when there's a just law, then we should do our best to obey. And also the church can make laws as well. Usually the church law is called ecclesiastical law, and there are two kinds of ecclesiastical law. If though that promulgated by the Pope, it's called the canon law, it's for the whole church. When the law is promulgated by the bishop for the particular church, for the diocese, it's called the diocesan law. Now, a parish priest, even though can be a bit bossy, but we cannot make laws. We can make rules, just like any father in the household can make rules for their family, but the rule doesn't have the force of a law. So we know that, you know, for those who are father in the family. So we can make rules, but not law. So only the bishop and the pope can make laws for the particular church, for the bishop and the universal church, the pope. So the canon law, you know, in 1917, Pope Benedict XV promulgated the code of canon law for the whole church, had been using that for quite a number of years. And then in the year 1983, Pope John Paul II promulgated a new code of canon law for the whole church, and that's what we are using until now. So, when you look at the precepts of the church, basically, they are the summarizing the most essential canon laws. You know, there's more than 1,000 canon in the Code of Canon Law. They sum up what is relevant to lay people into a few main points. Now, canon, even though you might think, 1,000 of canon in the canon law, it's a lot of law in the church. If you consider the church is more than 1 billion people, if a lot of, you know, structure, you know, priests and bishop and parish priests, assistant priests, that actually is pretty minimal. And also, you know, with the way that law being executed in church, you know, if you are like in a position, like in the parish community, sometimes you have to deal with like civil authority and civil law and bylaws of the city of Surrey, you know that the church is way better than like bylaws in the city. You know, it's really complicated. You know, anything you can do, so easy to break the bylaw in the city. Or even provincial law, federal law, you know, a lot of times it's way more complicated and way more difficult than the church law. So compared to that, I think church law is much more simple than let's say the city bylaw. Now, when thinking about canon law and the civil law, there's a couple of important differences there. The civil law quite often is enforced by the court, by the policeman, you know, by different departments that usually have someone to enforce the law. For canon law, for the church law, is mainly enforced by your conscience. So if there's a law to fast, you secretly eat some meat, you know, turkey, you know, eat some meat, nobody will get after you, but you know in your conscience you have to go to confession. If you miss a mass on Sunday, you go to golf on Sunday, didn't go to mass, nobody get after you, huh? But you know you have to go to confession. So it's canon law is enforced mainly by your conscience. You know, we priests and bishop or priest, we are not policemen. We can do our best to let you know what is the law, but that's your conscience to keep the law. We are not policemen. And also, another one is that in the civil law, it's really where there is a dispensation. But for the church law, dispensation happens way more often. So if somebody have a good reason not able to make the Mass on Sunday or Holy Day, the parish priest do have the authority to give dispensation. If somebody cannot fast on the fast day, the priest can give dispensation. The parish priest can do that. If somebody, cannot fast even an hour before communion, the priest can dispense the person from communion fast. So there can be dispensation. Oftentimes what happens is, sometimes there are some people in the church, they don't like any law at all. The reality is, people who disregard church law are the people who impose their own law on people more in a mean way and forceful way. They impose their own law on other people. That happened to bishop, that happened to priest. You know, some of the bishop and priest, they don't like law at all, and they are the one who impose their own will on people mercilessly. You know, so people who do follow the law, you know, I think it's something that help us to know what is our boundary in authority, how to exercise our authority in a responsible way. And oftentimes people who discard the law of the church, they just become so rigid in imposing their own will on other people. So in the catechism book, usually you will find 5 to 6, sometimes 4, sometimes 5, sometimes 6. Depends on the catechism book. For children, they list 4 things in the catechism book. For adults, they list 5. For mature adults, they list 6. Okay, so the first 4 is all there. The first one is go to Mass on Sunday and on Holy Day. You know Sunday, there are 52 Sundays roughly during the year. In Canada, which 2 are the holy days of obligation that we must go to church? Which 2?
January 1st.
You let the student answer.
January 1st.
Huh? Huh? It's a Sunday anyway.
Oh.
Yeah.
January 1st.
Don't forget that one. That one is the Mother of God. We should go to church.
Christmas.
It can be midnight Mass. It can be the evening Mass on at 6:30. It can be during the day on the 25th. So those are the 2. But you know what? If you look at the canon law, besides Sunday, there are actually 10 holy days of obligation. In Canada, the bishop asked the Holy See to dispense us from all the other 8. So we only have to keep 2. So we are quite lazy.
So why not Easter in Canada?
Huh? No, Easter is Sunday already. Oh. It's Sunday already. So there's all the 52 Sundays include Easter. It's always on a Sunday. But the other 8, what are the other 8, okay? Three of them have been transferred to a Sunday. Epiphany, January the 6th, is now in the sun. It's just go to the closest Sunday, combined. Ascension Thursday, go to Sunday. So, combined. Corpus Christi Thursday, move to the Sunday, combined. So 3 of them got combined. The other 5, disband all together. March 19th, St. Joseph. If you don't go to church, it's no sin. And then the other one, June 29th, St. Peter and Paul. The other one, August 15th, the Assumption of Our Lady. And then November 1st, All Saints Day. And then December the 8th, Immaculate Conception. So those are the 5 holy days. But in the U.S., All Saints, Assumption, Immaculate Conception are still holy day of obligation. And then also, Ascension Thursday for some diocese in the U.S. is still celebrated on Thursday. So U.S. is a bit more holy day than we do.
So
they got 3 to 4.
So if we're visiting the U.S., we have to...
Now, I read both interpretations. There have been some interpretations say, yes, you have to. But also our canon law teacher, Monsignor Rossi, said if the church law gives you a favor, you carry the favor even if you leave your own place for the time being. So according to that interpretation, if you are Canadian, because the favor is granted to you in Canada, when you go to U.S., you carry that favor with you. So there's an interpretation of that by some canon lawyer.
What if you're an American in Canada and they don't have that?
And also the church, as another principle in the canon law, is that the law that restricts you is to interpret strictly. The law that gives favor is to interpret, broadly. So because it's a favor given, so if you are going to Canada, you got the favor. Interpret broadly. Mm-hmm. So I think that also is a principle of interpretation of the law. Yeah. So canon law is fun. And I find that when I was at BCIT, I studied the business law or liability. I think canon law is much more humane than civil law in many respects. Because, you know, nowadays, you know, anything people will can sue you, you know, and get a lawyer to talk to you, it's really inhumane, huh? But I think canon law is still, is way more humane than civil law and city by law. You know, I hate city by law, but anyhow, something driving me nuts here is that, you know, the tree that we planted so many years ago to protect, you know, the property from the wind. Now, you know, when they are getting old and weak and, you know, and if you cut one of those trees, it will cost you $10,000. Every single one of them, you know. So we are stuck. We are stuck. We cannot move them.
So what happens if it lands on the...
I don't know. In the rectory, yeah?
Yeah.
Then you'd have a new parish priest.
Then you could drop them.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, but some of them, I think they are going to the end of their lifespan now. Yeah. They may be gone anytime. But anyhow, anything like that. By law. Anyhow. By law. Yeah. It's a lot of by law. So that's the first one. The second one is that we have to observe the fast day and abstinent day of the church. And I think you all know because of yesterday Ash Wednesday, you know that you're 14 and above, you abstain. Abstain means abstain from meat, but you can still eat seafood. I think that's really easy, you know. And then for fasting, if you are 18 to 59, then we fast. We fast on Ash Wednesday and also Good Friday. And so fasting means you have three meals. Of the three meals, only one is a full meal. And the most difficult thing is no solid food in between. When fasting means it's no eating at all, that means fasting. So no solid food in between, that's the main thing about fasting. It's like communion fast, right? Remember, if you receive communion, you fast an hour before communion. So there's no food, no drink, except water. If you are sick, you can take medication. Okay?
Is there something that they require or recommend vegetarians on a fast day?
No, there's no. People ask me that question before. If I'm vegetarian, what should I do on a fast or abstinent day? You can do more if you want to, but there's no requirement because the law. When law is being made,
something that they suggest.
That I think in that situation you try to focus on more of the fasting aspect, right? Because abstinent, you don't have to abstain any further. Mm-hmm. But I think it's more on the fasting aspect that you can work on more. Yeah, or drinking aspect too. You know.
Why is fish allowed?
That's a good question. I read about that one. I forgot. Pat, and you remember that one?
Because they're cold-blooded.
I know it's cold-blooded. Yeah. But there's a reason behind that.
I don't remember.
Yeah.
Do fish have a heart?
Yeah.
I think so, they have blood. Have anybody read something about that? Well, I remember reading something about that, but I just, it just, it's just,
but I think it's got something to do with the cold blood.
Isn't it because it's just a plain white meat? I think that what's not allowed is the red meat or the pink meat, but if it's white...
I do heard a priest mention that he studied in Europe, he was in Europe before. He knew that for some European, eating fish is a penance. It's really unpleasant for them.
To eat it is a penance.
Yeah. For me, it's a penance to eat fish oftentimes. I don't like fish myself. Yeah. So I do know for some European to eat fish is a real penance because they really like meat. Yeah.
You were saying something about white meat?
I know, it's something
that's what we are taught back home at church.
Yeah.
Like on those holidays, you don't eat red meat. You can eat fish because it's white.
Yeah. I think also in Chinese culture, the distinction is more about blood, warm blood and cold blood animal. Because fish, usually they are the cold blood many animal. And then the warm blood animal are the one like chicken and the other one that we don't eat. on abstinence. Technically, also, so we fast on Ash Wednesday and Good Friday, but we usually, as Catholic, we should abstain from meat on Friday during the year. And then if you do eat meat on Friday during the year, we should do something extra, like to act of charity or pray for the sick, the dying. And quite often for myself, I just find it's my practice, you know, if you want to do that, you can do that. If you don't want, you can do some other thing. My practice is if I do have to eat meat on Friday, I pray a decade of the rosary, 1 hour, Father, 10 Hail Marys, extra. So for the sick and the dying. So that will be my substitute for the fasting abstinence, Friday abstinence, when in a situation I do have to eat meat on a Friday. Yeah. But the thing about as Catholic, we all are obliged to do penance and to pray. And so something that, you know, that really make us a bit different than other people who are non-believers is that we do go to church on Sunday, on the weekend. We make Sunday special. But also we make Friday special, that we do some penance, that we fast, that we abstain, so that spirit of penance on Friday especially, and the spirit of prayer on Sunday especially, that really somehow give us a sense of identity. Because when we don't practice prayer and penance, you know, in our religious practice, then it's so easy for us to become lukewarm. So it's something that's really basic there to help us to build up our Catholic identity. So going to Mass on Sunday, Holy Day, abstain and fast on those two fast days, Ash Wednesday and Good Friday, and then of course the Friday during the year. But when a Friday happen to have a big feast day, then we don't have to fast. Like the Feast of Sacred Heart is always on a Friday. The octave of Easter is all 8 days from Easter on until Divine Mercy Sunday. Those 8 days, the Friday, you don't have to fast or abstain. And then the third piece of the church you also find in Catechism book is go to communion at least once a year, and the fourth one is go to confession at least once a year. I think maybe, I didn't look at the old code of 1917, maybe in the 1917 code, it did mention confession once a year for everybody. But it's nowhere to be found in the 1983 code. The 1983 code never mentioned you have to go to confession once a year. But it did mention that you must go, Catholic must go to communion at least once a year during Easter time. Now remember, in the old days, Catholic doesn't go to communion that often. And sometimes it can be influenced. It's a bad influence by Jansenism, which is a heresy that almost like emphasize you must be really, really holy to go to communion, to scare people from going to communion. And so it was a bad influence in the church in those days, and it was actually influencing people even down the ages. And so people didn't go to communion that often in the old days. And you think about in that background, that's why Jesus appeared to St. Margaret Mary and asking her to promulgate devotion to the Sacred Heart, inviting people to go to communion on the first Friday of the month. Because in those days, to go to communion once a month is a big deal. It's really frequent in those days, standard. Go to communion once a month in preparation for sin. So Jesus appeared to St. Margaret Mary to encourage more frequent communion. And so that's why the church also have that need to make a law, require people to come to communion at least once a year. Now, in the new code, that's still the requirement, but also that implies if you have a mortal sin in your soul, you should go to confession before your Easter communion. So even though it's not explicit in the 1983 code, once a year confession is still implied implicitly because of the obligation of communion once a year. So that's the once a year, communion, confession. Okay. And then for adult, you have the fifth one in the catechism book. is to support the church. So we do support the church see our capacity because it do cost quite a bit of money to maintain a church. And so when we receive from the church, we also should contribute. There's no set rule how much we should contribute. This book recommend, you know, perhaps once in 1 month, you contribute 1 day of your income. There's one suggestion in this book. And then another one, a bit more lenient suggestion would be in 1 week, contribute 1 hour of your wage. That would be less than 1 day income in 1 month. Whatever you can do, but this is some of the suggestion is like that. In some Christian church, even in some Catholic church, there's some movement that people actually would actually give 10% of their income. And some people when they do that, they feel they actually experience lots of blessing from God by doing that. They give so much away, but they find that even more coming, you know. So people do experience that when they give more generously, then also they rely on the providence of God, and they do experience that God look after their needs as well. And also they can experience that sense of detachment from material things that also help them to have spiritual growth in their life, even more importantly. You know, it's not like a business deal with God, you know, I give you, you look after me. But it's more, even more so, it's more a deeper level is that you feel that sense of liberation, that you are being detached from material things and able to grow in holiness and intimacy with God. So, yeah.
Without giving, is it specifically giving to the church to help with the church function, or is it like a combination of church and, say, charitable organizations?
It can be both, yeah. Some people, when they give 10%, they might give 5% to the church and 5% to the poor. You know, they may give to some organizations like St. Vincent de Paul. And there are some people who are even more heroic. They may even give 20% and 10% to the church and 10% to the poor. So I think people see what is their means, and then they give. You know, some people they might be able to give even more. You know, some people who might be single, and also quite more well established. You know, may be able to give more. Somebody who have little children, you know, to feed at home, and they may be of course sometimes not as easy as the one who is single and more established.
So does it have to be monetary donation, or can be like food, because some church accept food?
Sometimes the poor, you can give food and or clothing. There are many different ways we can give. Of course, when you're talking about money, it's not a regular thing, right? Mm-hmm. That is something that you can also keep in on a regular basis. So of course people can give in different ways, and some people they may not have the money, but they have the time and the talent to give, and so there's always different ways that we can support the church. And finally, you know, another precept of the church is about to observe the law of marriage. A lot of time if you study canon law, a lot of the focus is based on the marriage law, because a lot of time when canon law being applied is in marriage situation. People get married, or people actually the marriage break down, and so they have to look for annulment and things like that. And so there are actually priests assigned working in the tribunal who help those situations. And so those who study canon law, a lot of time, a main focus is on the marriage law. Basically, of course, when Catholics get married, they should marry somebody who is free to marry in the Catholic Church, and also to contract a true marriage, it should be done within the church before three witnesses, including the priest. And so it's important for you, if you have children who are Catholic, make sure when they grow up and they really want to get married, you know, they are with somebody who is free to marry in the Catholic Church, and also to have a true marriage, it should be done within the Catholic Church. So that is the precept of the church. Now, when when we're thinking about, you know, so in the first part of the catechism, we learn about what to believe. And that, you know, the main focus is on the Apostle Creed. We go through the creed about creation, about redemption, about sanctification, the church, communion of saints, the last things. And then we talk about the moral life. And then the main focus is on the Ten Commandments. And then also we talk about the precept of the church. And then, and of course, you know, for the Ten Commandments, you have to ask yourself, am I in any habitual sin that can be an obstacle for me to living a true Catholic life? You know, we mentioned this earlier session about contraception can be such an issue, you know. There can be some other issue as well, you know, if I mentioned before, you know, if you habitually, not going to church on Sunday, you know, it's something that must work on, you know. Sometimes it can be some other issue, you know, people living together, for example, or some other issue that ongoing, for to becoming Catholic, you know, need to be dealt with before becoming Catholic, because you don't want to become Catholic. And then within a week you have to go to confession again, you know. But it's a sin that you cannot give up. So you know we need to give up sin before becoming Catholic. You know, it's better to delay than to become Catholic in a state of serious sin. You know, and not giving up the sin at all. So it's really important to examine the conscience and also that's why I was pushing to have the moral life done before you're becoming Catholic, so you know what you're getting into, because you know it's important that you know to become Catholic means you will keep the commandments, you will do your best. We are not God. We cannot know for sure, oh, I will not sin ever, you know. Nobody can say that. But we can always have that determination. I want to do my best. I make the decision. I will do my best to keep the commandment. And I will do that by the grace of God. It's important, you know, because in the Old Testament, when God gave the commandment, St. Paul point out the law, the commandment, actually helped the Old Testament people see how weak they are. Because they try to keep the commandment, but they fail a lot of time. So the commandment actually is to help them realize that how helpless they are, how weak they are. And then Jesus came, you know, he perfected the law, he gave us the commandment of love, of selfless love, but also he gave grace. And so St. Paul, in his letter, he pointed out the grace of God allow us to have that capacity to keep the law. Just by our own self, by our natural strength, a lot of time is we cannot do it. You cannot do it. But we know that, you know, God is faithful when he gives a commandment. When we know, and when there's a commandment that is a bit beyond our natural strength, God gives the grace so that we can do it. With the grace of God that we can do it. And so that's why it's really important that after learning the commandments, and actually in some class it will be actually before we learn the commandments, but we put that before your baptisms, because this year is a bit early Easter, so that you know what you're getting into. Then we have to go into the third part of the catechism. It's about the means of grace. Because when we think about that, you know, to keep the commandment, we cannot just rely on our own strength. We need the grace of God. And the grace of God mainly come to us through the sacraments, but also through prayer. And so that's why prayer and sacraments really important, really important. So one of the key to become holy is that we know how weak we are. We recognize that fact. And then we know, the more we know that we are weak, the more we know we have to rely on God. So when we study all the commandments, we think, oh boy, I think almost all of them, you know, don't be discouraged. You know, if you determine to do your best not to do them again, and you, of course, rely on the grace of God, you know, I think that's what is required. Determine to do your best, you know. Of course, for the big one, you have to make the concrete step to give them up, you know, not just the good intention, but when you make up your mind, you, of course, include the concrete step, you know, to give that up. But also you do so relying on the grace of God. Relying on the grace of God. Really important. And so that's why, you know, at the beginning of the class, every time I we pray the rosary together, you know, one deck at the rosary. Because for many people, that's a simple way, a powerful way that help us to actually accept the grace of God and also to open our heart to the grace of God. The rosary is a really powerful daily prayer that we can make use of. It's a prayer that we can help to obtain grace, but also it's a prayer that help us to think about Jesus with Mary. It's a prayer that really help us to meditate, to be able to think about holy things. So in the coming weeks, we're going to talk about the sacrament, and so it's also a good preparation, you know, as some of you be prepared for the sacraments of baptism, and then of course some of you will be preparing the sacraments of confirmation. But one of the key about confirmation is when you get confirmed, you also renew your own baptismal commitment. You renew your baptismal commitment, but also you, if you're baptized in a non-Catholic community, you also make the profession of faith, of the Catholic faith, and receive into the Catholic Church, and then get confirmed. And then another sacrament will be really important because it's the Holy Eucharist. Because baptism, confirmation, Holy Eucharist, they are called the sacraments of initiation because they let the person enter into the community of the church. So those three sacraments are called the sacraments of initiation because we enter into the community of the church by means of these three sacraments. So that will be our next topic. Okay?